T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Haw, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Dave Wannstedt, Bears head coach for 6 years.
The Bears.
The Bears.
Super Bowl champion.
How about them Cowboys? Yeah!
Great mustache.
Some say it's a symptom of manliness. Others a cause, the mustache.
Wani, hanging out with Mully and Haw.
Open up the door, it's Dave.
Who?
Dave, D-A-V-E.
Dustin, we're not going to waste airtime on that, okay?
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank
next
you very
question.
Much.
Dave Wannstedt.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Coach Wannstedt joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Morning, Coach.
I am doing great, fellas. We are 2-0. There's, 10 teams in the league right now that are 2-0, so that's outstanding. I mean, I know there's a lot of, what ifs and how good, but when we went to the Super Bowl with Dallas, I'll say this. I remember we went out and played Denver in Denver in a snowstorm, and John Elway was banged up that game. You know, so obviously they didn't have the same team. You're going to play teams to win big and get a championship or be in contention. You have to you're going to face teams that have adversity, injuries, whatever it might be, and you got to just take advantage of that. That's all part of the game. So I look at that a little bit differently than most people.
Seems like you're going to face teams every week now that have injuries. My God, what a weekend, Dave. What's your takeaway when you see 7 guys go down with ACLs and 40 players leave and not return over the course of an NFL weekend?
Yeah, you know what? It's one of those situations where the teams that stay healthy from injuries, everybody's going to want to know what they did in the offseason. That's how this league works, you know. And right now, the Bears, whatever program that they have been on, from their strength and conditioning coach, it seems to be working. I mean, they're as healthy a football team as anybody in the league right now, and that's a positive. So the players on the Bears roster, I'm going to give them credit. They were doing things that, for whatever reason, they haven't gotten hurt. Their bodies have held up okay. So it's unfortunate, but that's the reality of it.
Dave, from the outside looking in, it appears the Bears have taken seriously this commitment to the running game, and Matt Nagy made some adjustments off-season to the approach. With your trained eye, after watching them 2 games on tape, what's the biggest coaching adjustment that you see?
I love what they're doing right now. And, they are a balanced team from the stand. And not only does it help you win games, I wish people would understand this. Not only does it help you win football games, you got to look at it what it does to your defense. It keeps your defense rested. Your possession time is going to be up. On the other side, if you are balanced, I think the Bears only, of all their third downs, they had, 16 third downs. I think they had 3 of them that I would consider long yardage situations. I mean, do you know how much stress there is on a defense? If it's 3rd down and 1, 2, 3, or 4, I don't know what you're going to do. Are you going to run it? Are you going to throw it? You've got a lot of options, and the defense is on their heels. There's so many factors. And plus, we're doing now what I have been pounding the drum for since I started following Mitch. We're doing now what Mitch can do the best. I mean, you realize that both of his, they're getting them out of the pocket. They're moving them out of the pocket. They're going play action pass. They're throwing screens. I mean, this is who he is. Guys, his 2 touchdown passes were both third down and longs, and they were, I don't want to use the word busted plays, but they were scrambles. I mean, you know, it. And hey, trust me, Russell Wilson, now, I don't want the listeners to overreact and say Coach said that they weren't designed plays. No, what I'm saying is, you know how many touchdowns that I've seen Brett Favre score on plays like that, where the primary receiver wasn't open and he starts scrambling around? Or Russell Wilson at Seattle does it every week. Watch him this week. You'll see him make a half a dozen plays that are non-conventional plays because everything broke down. He's under pressure. He's an athlete, and he finds a guy and makes a play. So it's all part of it. And it's ironic that their two touchdowns were off of plays that really weren't – you don't draw those up on the board. You're not going to go in and say, show me that play. Show me that play to Montgomery in the playbook. I don't know if you're going to find it, to be honest with you.
I think what's fascinating is both those touchdowns, you had a three-man rush, and you had eight guys dropping, and they were almost kind of forcing Mitch to make a decision. And both times, he got on his horse, and he moved around, and he bought time, and he made plays that ended up really impacting the game. Does that change that philosophy? If you're Joe Judge and you're looking at that, do you rethink it and say, I played into this guy's strength? Do you think other teams look at that and say, no, we got to pressure Mitch in those situations in order to force the decision quicker?
Well, I would pressure Mitch more than I don't know what the need was on third down and eight to rush three guys. I mean, I wouldn't see that at all. I mean, you guys know me. I wouldn't rush three unless it was long yardage or we had the game in hand. But that's just philosophy standpoint. You know, I mean, I would pressure Mitch and try to make him make quick decisions and not give him time. And give Mitch credit. He fine got open receivers. And everybody says, oh, well, the second touchdown, he kind of threw it up for grabs. You know how many touchdowns Larry Fitzgerald scores every week as guys just throw the ball up for grabs? You know, and that's – you got to know your players, and you got to have confidence if they're one-on-one that they're going to go up and get the ball. And if not, the other guy's not going to get it.
So, Dave, let's talk about defensive philosophy for a second. I don't think this is the week to maybe be overly aggressive, not with Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley, the wide receivers the Bears' corners have to face. But I think when you look at the first two games – How have you viewed the way Chuck Pagano has dealt with pressure and wanting to kind of bring pressure? He's relied so much on his front to provide, the quarter to get sacks and to, you know, hurries and those kind of things. Does he need to be more aggressive, especially maybe with a lead, so you don't sit back and wait for things to happen?
Absolutely not. Not this week. At least I wouldn't. I think that you're looking at a quarterback similar to Matthew Stafford from Detroit. There's probably a dozen quarterbacks in this league that can beat you throwing the ball. Stafford's one of those guys. He didn't have a very good supporting cast when they played the Bears. You know, his top receiver was out. But when you play Matt Ryan, I mean, these guys, he can light you up. So, one of the best things that the Bears are doing, guys, they aren't giving up big plays. So anybody that's out there screaming, hey, we need to blitz more and do this more, I mean, that's why you're paying Quinn, and that's why you're paying Mack. You got good pass rushers up front. You're getting good pressure, and they are not giving up the big plays, and they're coming up with a couple turnovers a game. I got no problem with the Bears. I love what they're doing right now on defense. They're not missing tackles. The fundamentals that win games for you, I can see it when I watch the Bears on defense. Don't give up big plays. Make them earn it. Don't miss tackles. You know, there's not mental mistakes. I like what they're doing, and they'll adjust it as the year goes on, obviously. But this week is a dangerous week. I don't know how. I mean, last week, Matt Ryan threw for 450 yards. No, I'm sorry. The first week, he threw for 450 yards, and they had over 500 yards and lose the football game. I mean, I don't know, to Seattle, I don't know how you do that. Then last week, it was the same situation. A lot of points, no turnovers, and they lose the game. So they've had you talk about heartbreaking losses now. They have, and, we'll see how they respond. You know, I mean, if this was week seven, I would say the Bears are going to be in good shape because you can only go on so long like that as a team before you crack. but it's early enough at the season that they're going to get Atlanta's best effort. I mean, Matt Ryan, these guys are veteran players. Julio Jones, you mentioned. I mean, they're going to get Atlanta's best effort this week, and they're going to have to be ready to play.
I don't want to over-exaggerate who's doing what, but if you had to make a judgment on the difference from this year to last year in terms of the Bears' offense, Dave, is it Mitchell Trubisky? Is it the offensive line? Is it the play caller?
I'm going to give some credit to Mitch that I think he's probably better. He's more in tune. Okay. So let's do it. Now on the other side, it's the play calling. I mean, because right. you cannot, and I made this comment about the Rams when they ran it 40 times and beat the Cowboys in the opener, talking to people in LA, you know, you don't decide to run the football like that overnight. That's not something you wake up Monday morning and say, okay, I want to run the ball this week 40 times and I'm going to do it out of two tight ends and I'm going to do play. No, you got to make a commitment in the offseason. So let's give Matt Nagy credit that when he brought these new offensive coaches in and they sat down and they all looked at last year, they said, where are we at? And they said, oh, you know, we got to get some type of running game and play action pass. And they've committed to that in the offseason and they have worked on it. They have worked us. Remember what Tom Thayer told me when I went up to the Bears practice. I asked Tom, I said, Tom, I don't even need to watch this practice. I'll figure this stuff out in 10 minutes. I said, just give me the script. Show me the plays, the first 15 plays in the first team period that the Bears had, and I'll tell you what they're going to do. And he says, I looked at it, and he said, they had 7 runs on there. So the first practice, Matt Nagy came out, and he lined up, and he ran the ball. And that sends a message to your offensive line. That sends a message to your back to your entire team. Hey, guys, this is going to be a big part of what we're doing. And I love it. I think it's so far it's been really, really good. And the only thing that I probably debate is the end of the game is, and, you know, it's all flaw. And I know you got to throw, but I'm at the other end of the spectrum. You know, I mean, if we had a lead by 10 points and I was in Miami, you guys saw it. Nobody would get the ball except Ricky 14 times in a row. I didn't care, but we were going to move the chains and I wouldn't take a chance of turning the football over. So that's, you know, I was a little bit on that side of it. And I would have just liked to seen them run. They were running it so well at the end. Just close the game out. You got 7 minutes, make some first downs and let's go home.
Dave, got to ask you this because you were a special teams coach in the NFL as long as you were a head coach. When you saw the Falcons handle that onside kick and the way that they did and how they blew that game without knowing that you just how to deal with an onside kick, what went through your mind and how should that be handled the next day watching the tape and with that special teams unit? Because that is the NFL definition of sort of unacceptable.
Yeah, it truly was. It ended up that way. I mean, let's give the Falcons it was a great kick, unbelievable kick, okay? And the way they had it set up, the front line guys, we used to do the same thing. The front line guys are your blockers. They block the most dangerous guys. And then the guys right behind them are the ones that have the best hands to get the ball. So I think there was just a little bit of indecision and panic. There's no way that it's not that no one that guys didn't understand the rules. I mean, they knew obviously, you know, that the football had to go 10 yards. I mean, Dallas before they could get it, and Atlanta knew that they were waiting for it to go 10 yards to jump on it. In that situation, if they're closing in and it's going to go 10 yards, you got to get on the football. So it was just a panic decision. That's, I wouldn't get into they didn't cover this by coaches or they didn't understand the roles. No, that's all good radio talk. You know, but that's not fact. I mean, they knew the roles, they just panicked.
Dave, when we think about this game upcoming, you got to get to the quarterback, you got to rush the passer always. We saw some of that. But we're still concerned about conditioning with that defense, the Bears defense. What will be the difference this week? They're down 3 starters, one of them the right tackle. I'm talking about the Falcons. What do you make of this matchup, and what's going to be the key to the game?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, they have in the second half struggled a little bit more with the conditioning end of it. You know, Pagano's just got to keep rotating those defensive linemen to get them, you know, to keep them fresh and try to pick and choose certain situations when you want to give Khalil Mack a rest and so forth. There's really no easy solution. I mean, you can only run so much during the week to get your conditioning up once you get into the season. I'm sure the Bears are doing all that. They've got their conditioning. My first thought would be, hey, let's try to keep these guys fresh. I always wanted my defensive linemen. When we were going to rotate, I can remember telling Butch Davis, who at the time was the defensive line coach, and I would say, hey, Butch, I want these guys fresh at the end of the first half. We don't want to give up a score going in at halftime, and we want them fresh at the end of the game. So Butch did a great job of figuring out when we were going to substitute to make sure that, hey, if it was 4 minutes to go before the half, or if it was 5 minutes at the end of the game and we had to close it out, we had a lead, that now Quinn and Khalil Mack and these guys, that's when they should be coming in fresh if you were going to give them a little bit of a rest. So, you know, there is a little bit of philosophy to it. You got to think it through a little bit. Otherwise, you get caught and they're tired at the end. And now, you know, it's too late. You can't make any plays.
Dave, thanks a ton. Always great catching up with you. Appreciate it.
Good stuff,
okay,
Coach.
Guys. Good talking to you. Bye-bye.
That is Dave Wannstedt. Fascinating, really, the way that he looks at it and breaks it down. It's going to be a very difficult game. And, you know, we got to get into this idea of Mitch and whether his improvement makes the Bears a playoff team, as the fine folks at Pro Football Focus seem to believe.
Trubisky magic.
We'll talk about that Trubisky magic next. I know you have strong feelings, David. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Yeah, I would say you look at some of that, and for the majority of times, it probably depends schematically as to where you're at. But, yeah, you can see when you look back, you can see some things with the man zone stuff. And I just feel like yesterday that was something that they really did a lot more than they've shown. And again, they didn't have a whole lot of evidence other than what they did in Miami with Patrick Graham as to what they were going to do. So they'll have more as the season goes on, but that's, you deal with that every week. And some coordinators that are rely heavily on man, that's what they do. That's their identity. They don't get off of that, you know? So it just kind of is week by week. I would say this though, especially with where we're at, we understand that we can certainly be better versus zone when teams do that. And I think that's, you start asking, okay, how do you do that? And where do you do it? The film study is huge at being able to understand what types of zones they're playing. Is it one high? Is it two high? Do they drop eight? You know, you start seeing more of that. And if they're going to drop eight, then you got to run the ball. So we definitely can be better there versus zone.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. That is Matt Nagy yesterday talking about the beloved. And I got to tell you, we were kind of chatting a little bit yesterday, David, about Pro Football Focus and the way they go about doing what they do. And you weren't doing handstands about the way they were breaking down the Bears and breaking down Mitch in particular. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, they had a story that they posted, Mitch Trubisky's improvement makes the Chicago Bears a playoff team, and they point out that their grade of 80.2 was the highest grade for Mitch since week 12, I believe, of the 2018 season. And I understand that, you know, he took a step forward this year, maybe. I just hesitate to get too excited about what we've seen. I just think that the word improvement, are we agreeing on that? You know, is there a consensus that there's improvement for Mitch Trubisky? And I just don't know that I'm ready to agree there. I see a wildly inconsistent quarterback who at times has been really good and dangerous and a weapon. And then I see another guy, other times he's been really bad and repeating bad habits that we've seen before, and a guy that you can't win with. You know, Mark Potash, probably of the Sun-Times, summed it up as best as I've seen, you know, in terms of numerically. This is the grade that I'm looking at. I mean, he's got his four best quarters this season. He's got 138.6 passer rating for those four quarters. That's outstanding. That'd be good enough for eighth best in the league. His four worst quarters, he's got a 30 passer rating, which would be the second worst. High highs, low lows, And if you want to talk about improvement, we've gone from unacceptable to serviceable. And if you want to keep your standard there for an NFL franchise, okay, then Mitch has improved. But can he get better? Absolutely. Does he need to be more consistent? Without question. Is he good enough to lead the Bears to the playoffs? I'm not there yet. Let's wait and see.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I don't think that I understand quite their grading system in the same way that that I understand other grading systems. And, you know, I'm not telling you that Mitch is a failure or in any way not up to snuff as a player, because he's been better. But that, I'm not confusing better with excellent or with even, you know, passable in terms of the way that he's going about what he's doing. I think that, you know, again, the judgment on him, it remains. It's out. We haven't reached a point where we're ready to say this is the guy and he's going to start and he's the future. They did not pick. You know, I heard Mitch before the first game with Jeff Joniak, and he talked about wanting to prove everyone wrong. You know, I'm going to prove them all wrong. Well, the people he has to prove wrong are the people that are in charge of this team that put together this franchise. I mean, it's those are the people that made the decision. It's not some media plot to not credit Mitch. I mean, it's a completely different idea than maybe he thinks it is.
These aren't external forces in play here. This is an internal vote of no confidence that you receive from the organization that drafted you second overall. And again, I said it yesterday, and I believe this to be true. I mean, if you're so concerned about becoming good, and I think that's where Mitch entered the season, everybody's so concerned with him becoming good, you forget about becoming great. And so is Mitch being good enough for this team to get to the playoffs? Well, their defense has got to play a lot better, and they've got to be the defense that we expected them to be, or else you're going to have to expect a lot more out of your quarterback. Look, Mully, we both look around the league, and we've seen a lot of quarterbacks. But this year, you know, you see guys like Josh Allen taking a step in Buffalo. You see Joe Burrow kind of getting it right away in Cincinnati. You see other examples of quarterbacks, young quarterbacks, grasping and rising to the occasion and grasping their offense. And I wonder, just after 43 starts, if we're wondering what Mitch Trubisky still is, if we're still wondering that, don't we already know?
Well, he's got to be better than he's been. And, I mean, that's not a little bit better. And that's not our judgment. That's their judgment. That is the way that they've broken down this team. It's not like anybody is rushing to kind of say, oh, Mitch, you know, you are the man and everything is copacetic. I don't get that sense even remotely, frankly. I think that we're seeing the same issues and problems and evaluations from about Mitch that we've seen all along. And I guess Pro Football Focus is seeing something different. I'm not there yet.
Well, they're watching the tape. They're watching the tape, and they're grading based on what they think should happen. And I just think we can watch the tape too. But I'm just not sure that you can measure it however you want to measure it. The eye test is very subjective, and I just don't think he passes on the eye test enough to be a guy that you feel comfortable with yet. Maybe that'll change Sunday in Atlanta. But right now, I'm just sort of like, I'm with Matt Nagy. It's okay. Everything is okay.
We just need to be able to, again, go back and watch the tape to remind ourselves of the stuff that we thought we saw.
Good advice.
We'll continue the conversation after Kevin gives us a scoreboard update.
Scoreboard update.
Thank you very much. This is a Glenview Luxury Import scoreboard update, the North Shore's newest Alfa Romeo.
A lot of the details, you know, Mitchell Trubisky, at times he's got to, you know, run the play according to the plan, because as great as the catch was on the first third down by Allen Robinson and it continued the drive alive, the fourth play of the game resulted in a sack that Mitchell Trubisky should have thrown the ball to Tariq Cohen out to the left-hand side rather than taking a sack. But all that's correctable by reps and by the evaluation of it on tape.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. It is it's fascinating, really, to kind of witness what the evaluation process is with Mitch and how that has changed. And I think that everybody wants the same thing, which is an improvement from the quarterback and something to kind of hang your hat on when we start talking about that position in particular. I don't know, David, as we sit here right now and evaluate where Mitch is at, that he has improved that dramatically. Maybe Matt Nagy has made an improvement. Maybe they're using him in a better way than they had before. Maybe it's as much on the coach as it is anything else.
I think that's probably a good point, and it's worth remembering. And I don't want to move the goalposts here. I don't want to be a hypocrite by saying, you know, earlier in the year and even last year, all Mitch has to do is be middle of the road and the Bears will be happy, because he's, you know, pretty much middle of the road right now. And I think that there's not entirely reason to be happy because of the inconsistency. That's what you're trying to, you know, if you know that this is a quarterback that's going to go out and for four quarters be pretty much at the same level of the first as he is the fourth, and maybe not have those high highs, but he's going to avoid the low lows. It's easier to plan. It's easier to expect. And I think it's easier to accept. The swings in consistency makes it difficult to project and to plan and to game plan. We saw that with Rex Grossman. You know, to a different degree, we saw it with Jay Cutler. You know, the feast or famine aspect of any professional athlete, but especially a quarterback, is something you want to avoid. So I just wonder if the word improvement is something we throw around a lot, like, oh, geez, he's improved. Based on what? I will agree with this. He's much better in front of the microphone this year. And I think that's what a lot of people are judging. They're judging his demeanor after games and between games and during the week. And Mike Floriano had a good interview with him. And that's what I think people are looking at and said, yeah, the perception has improved. Is the reality really different?
We'll run it by Mike Florio. We'll ask him about that and see his take on what's different. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day, day by day, we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We get beat.
Insider Mike Florio.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score. We love our opportunity to talk to Mike Florio. He joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline. Good morning, Michael. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you? Mike?
We are okay. You know, we're discussing our quarterback here, Mitchell Trubisky, and whether there is the vast improvement that some people seem to see with him, or if that's just something people are looking for that may or may not exist. What's your take?
Well, I think it's too early to tell, and I think the sample size needs to grow. I spoke to him after the game on Sunday. He called me on the way home. I try to talk to 3 to 5 guys after the early games on Sundays just for some content for Football Night in America, and then it turns into things that I end up posting at PFT. And one thing that I noticed almost immediately, and I've spoken to him 3-4 times over the past few years, he sounds different now. He sounds better. He sounds more confident, more self-assured, more focused, more determined. And part of it may just be age and natural maturation that happens. But I think that he believes in himself more than ever before. And he told me that when the team traded for Foles back in March during the pandemic and there really wasn't a whole lot of time to do anything, he used that to reflect on where he is, where he wants to be, and he became determined that he was going to get himself ready in the offseason and that he was going to get to training camp and he was going to show his teammates and his coaches what he had become and what he was ready to do. And he went out and he put in the work every day and he ended up with the job. And he just sounds like a guy who intends to keep the job, intends to keep trying to will the team toward victory. And, you know, they could have lost both games, but the reality is they won both games. And with 7 playoff spots available now in each conference, those wins in September are huge. They are money in the bank, and they put you in the mix for, you know, if unless you fall apart, but you get that early edge over your competitors for spot 7 if that's what you're vying for. Maybe you end up vying for the division title, although the Packers look pretty damn good this year. But I think it's trending in the right direction, and he's getting a lot of help from Nick Foles. He went on and on about how Nick Foles bringing information he's learned from other offenses to help make their offense better. You know, the attraction for Foles was he knows this offense. Well, he does, but he's been in other offenses. He's using that to enhance what they do. He's helping the quarterbacks generally. And so I think it's a good situation so far. It's easy to say that when the team is winning. it's all subject to change if 2-0 becomes 2-3.
Mike, I'm really curious. What were your expectations with Mitch Trubisky before that conversation in terms of what he would, you know, provide or what you'd get out of it? And how did that phone call, if it did, impact your view of the Bears season?
Well, here's the reality. When I make these calls and the way that I'm peeling back the curtain into the sausage making process, it is such a frenzy on a Sunday afternoon. First of all, lining up who we want to talk to, getting access to them, because sometimes it just doesn't work out. For example, we wanted Dak Prescott this week and we weren't able to make it happen before it was time to go to air. I mean, I got 90 minutes total to get these done, so I don't have a whole lot of time to develop expectations. It's just, okay, get some questions together so I don't sound like an idiot, and let's get on the phone and let's have a conversation and see what happens. And I just sensed a guy who is just he just gets it, right? And I think maybe that was one of the concerns about him the first couple of years. Does he really get it? He gets it. And he knows what the obstacles have been, and he's done what he's had to do to overcome them, and he's learning on the fly. And I think there's hope there. Now, look, it could be a good problem to have because he's not signed beyond this year. And at the end of the day, they may have to use the franchise tag on a guy they choose not to use the fifth-year option on. But, you know, that is a good problem to have. If he plays so well that he earns himself another contract and that they can't get an appropriate contract worked out and they have to use the franchise tag next year, that's a great situation because that means they've done much better than 2-0. That means they've gone to the playoffs, and that means Trubisky has cemented himself as the quarterback of the team for now and in the future. But I'm realistic. They should have lost week one. They could have blown week two, and I frankly thought the Giants were going to win that game. Now, the Saquon Barkley injury had something to do with that, I think, but still, they're 2-0. And I sensed a confidence that will serve the team well, and that seems to be serving it well so far.
When we talk about guys like that, you know, usually a player, it will click in earlier rather than later. Usually when a guy's going to be good, you will know fairly certain. Now, you know, you look at Terry Bradshaw, it took him years to kind of figure out what they were doing.
I'm not being mean.
I've
said this before, I think, on your show. Under today's standards, he'd have been back in Shreveport pumping gas not long before they won their Super Bowl and probably before the Immaculate Reception.
Is there an element of that to him? Is it fine? I guess what I'm asking is, does Matt Nagy finally seem to understand how to use this guy better, or is this guy getting better? I don't know that it's not both, but maybe it's neither. I don't know.
There are plenty of guys who I believe, if given the right system, the right amount of time, the right opportunities, can hit a higher ceiling than what we see early on. The problem in today's NFL, and it's getting worse, when you see Patrick Mahomes right away, man, one of the all-time greats. Lamar Jackson right away, man, MVP. Now we got Kyler Murray. He's incredible, and he's in his second year. Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert. I don't know if you guys saw any of the game on Sunday. I've been watching it back on the NFL Game Pass feature. Justin Herbert is the real deal. I don't know what the hell the Chargers are even thinking about going back to Tyrod Taylor. Herbert has got it in all capacities. They have hit a home run with this guy. So when you have that many guys who thrive immediately. I didn't mention Deshaun Watson. I can't mention Trubisky and Mahomes without Watson, obviously. It's required. You get fined if you don't. But I think when the two guys from his class who were taken after him have been so good, it creates a situation where there's going to be less patience. But sometimes the patience pays off. Let me give you this example, and I mean no disrespect to Mitch at all with this. When I've interviewed him in the past, I've come away from the conversation saying, man, that guy sounds a lot like Rob Gronkowski. And not in a good way, okay? And he does sound, if you listen to him, especially in the early years, it's just that kind of wide-eyed, just, you know, does he really get it? Is he just kind of bouncing through life and everything's great? It was different this time. This is a guy who is maturing, who is learning, and maybe he had to go through that fire to get to the point where he focused himself and realized, now is the time I got to grow up. Now is the time I got to embrace my destiny. Now is the time I have to decide what I want my NFL career to be. Do I want to be a flash in the pan who made it to the playoffs and got bounced on a double doink and ended up fading into oblivion, or as Mike Tyson would say, Bolivian? Or do I want to be a guy who sustains, who achieves, And there's a lot of unwritten chapters for Mitchell Trubisky, and what he's written so far this year is impressive. So I'm rooting for the kid. I love a story like this because it cuts against, you know, this ADD reality we're now in the NFL, and the fact that so many of these young quarterbacks are coming in and taking the league over right away. It doesn't create much margin for error for the guys who may need a little more time. Maybe Mitch just needed a little more time.
It will be an ongoing conversation here in Chicago, no question about that, Mike. I wonder if the conversation starts last night after seeing what the Saints did. Is Drew Brees done?
Well, you know, it's funny. He was asked that question after the game, and we played the video. And at one point, he makes a face where, you know, he's going to get into broadcasting after he's done playing. He could have gotten into acting based upon the way he ultimately answered the question because he did not appreciate the question. But the reality is Father Time continues to be undefeated. His deep ball has been gone for the past few years. This is a guy who manages an intricate offense. He delivers the ball to the open man, but something is missing there. Now, is it Michael Thomas? They got enough other weapons that Michael Thomas's absence should have been properly addressed last night. But, you know, they're up 17-7. And usually when the Saints are up 17-7, they drop the hammer and it's 31-7 and it's garbage time. They lost something. Their defense doesn't have the punch. They got ground and grounded and pounded, I guess would be the past tense of ground and pound, by the Raiders, even though Josh Jacobs, when you look at his numbers, he averaged like 3.6 yards per carry, 3.3 yards per carry, actually. And you take away his long run and it was like 2.8. But they just kept pounding and they softened up the defense and Darren Waller had 12 catches and the Saints just couldn't score points when they needed to. And I don't know if that offense is built to score points when it needs to. So here's the question. I look at Taysom Hill and they've paid him a ton of money. And was that money paid to use him more broadly and get the most out of it? Or was that a down payment on a guy who's going to be the potential successor to Drew Brees? And when you look at his snap count the first two games, he's way down on special teams, which suggests they're protecting him physically. He's down, way down over the playoff game against the Vikings in offensive snaps. He had two runs last night, no catches, no throws. I can't help but wonder, and not whether he's in bubble wrap, but just kind of a layer or two of plastic, because they think maybe Drew gets hurt, or, you know, maybe a week from now we're going to be having a more pointed discussion, because the reckoning may come on Sunday night when the Packers go to New Orleans and everyone gets to see it on a national platform on NBC. If they get shredded the way that I think they may get shredded, the topic you brought up is going to be far more relevant in 6 days.
What's your take on 7 ACL injuries in one weekend, 40 guys leaving and not returning, the number of injuries we've seen? And I think a lot of people want to make a connection to the preseason. Some of these guys wouldn't normally have played in the preseason. To me, it's also training camp issues, not being able to hit or practice hard and the way they kind of ramped up. Also, we're seeing some bad fields. What the hell's going on, NFL, with the surfaces these guys are playing on?
Well, as to the injuries, look, I think that this is more along the lines of it happens, with a word other than it on the front end. This is football. You cross the white line and you are instantly assuming a risk that something's going to happen to you that's going to cause you to leave the game and or miss time. Christian McCaffrey, we on PFTPM yesterday afternoon, 4 p.m. Central Time on Peacock. Sorry for the shameless plug, but we had Christian McCaffrey talking about his ankle injury, and he said, "I'm not a believer in coincidence. I think things happen for a reason, and it was just a freak injury." It's like, no. You can't reconcile those two, and I don't want to get into a spiritual thing here, but once you go onto the field, you're at risk, and the bodies are flying around, and it's amazing guys don't get injured more often with all those bodies in a mosh pit pushing in different directions. And sometimes, you know, injuries happen. Now, the MetLife Stadium field is fascinating to me because you've got the 49ers complaining about it. The Steelers and Giants played their week one. They had no complaints, even though the Steelers had some injuries during that game. A Jets source told me we were too busy getting our faces kicked in to notice the field. But, you know, the NFL put out yesterday this idea that, well, the field was certified, and it was certified by the league, and it's certified by the teams. Well, all the fields are certified. Even the crappy fields are certified. So we've seen how low that bar can be with other fields, including at times Soldier Field. I think of FedEx Field as well. One playoff game, they had to spray paint the dirt green. People who were there got green paint on their shoes after walking on the field. So we know the bar is low. I just hope that they take a closer look at. See, the problem is once you know you make yourself look bad if you're the NFL and you go back and take a look at it and say, oh wow, we screwed this up. Yeah, there is something wrong with the field. So they're more likely to double down. But the 49ers go back there again this week to play the Giants.
Mike, thanks a ton. Great catching up with you as always. Appreciate it.
See you guys. Have a good day.
Thanks, Mike.
That
good stuff.
Is Mike Florio. And we should tell you this segment with Mike Florio was presented by MailMedChicago.com, where a full head of hair is the winning play. We are going to bring in our guy Dan Bernstein next, and we'll have a chat with him. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.